welcome back to Life's a Beach. I'm your host, Alexia Inman. And honestly, today I don't really have a long intro spiel for you because I just want to get into it. Because I'm so excited about today's topic and today's guest. Like I kind of explained in my last episode, what I'm trying to do now with this podcast is share stories from miraculous people with miraculous life experiences. And that can hopefully, like, in turn, inspire any of you listening. And today, I have brought on another guest to share their story. And while I may be a bit biased about how amazing this guest is, for reasons that I will later elaborate on, I just want to tell you a little bit about her resume to give you a taste of how amazing she actually is. So, I mean, first off, and most importantly to me, she encapsulates what Life's a Beach, the podcast, is all about on so many levels. She's a recent collegiate graduate beach volleyball player, and she's become rather outspoken on how mental health has affected her game in the world of beach volleyball. And her courage to share her story has inspired me, and honestly, she's one of the main reasons I've stayed sane personally through 4 seasons of collegiate beach volleyball. She's a 2-time All Pac-12 academic honoree, a Volleymob second team All-American, a Pac-12 Pair of the Week recipient, which, might I add, she was the first one in part of a duo from Cal Beach Volleyball that they've ever received that title for. And she's one of the winningest players in Cal Beach Volleyball history. On top of all this, she graduated a semester early from UC Berkeley with her degree in sociology, and now is spending 8+ hours a day serving as a medical assistant before she goes to physician assistant grad school. Needless to say, she is a certified badass. And what I am most grateful for about her is that she's been one of my best friends since freshman year of high school and someone who I would literally fight to the death for. She has the most amazing heart and is such a genuine human, and I can't wait to share an open conversation about how her and I have both balanced our mental health and being collegiate athletes. Okay, without further ado, I present to you one of my best friends and favorite humans, Maddie Micheletti. Hi, Maddie.
Hello, Alexia. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm great.
I'm so happy you're here joining me today. I feel like I've honestly talked to you about doing this for a while, and you were like, yeah, let's do it. And there was simply not a better time than right now, because with this shift of what I'm trying to do with my podcast, I mean, immediately when I talk about sharing stories, that's what I'm trying to do here. My mind goes to you because you and I have been so open with communication about how mental health has affected us as collegiate athletes, and we've relied on each other a little bit in that aspect. So I'm so happy you're here to talk to me about this.
Me too. I know. We've been talking about this for so long, and I feel like you and I always talk during season 2, just like about when we were having like those mental health days. And so now it's good that we can do it on here on your podcast.
Oh, yes. And hopefully, I'm sure people will relate to this, because especially this year in the COVID season, I don't know about you, but the amount of people I saw coming out about how they struggle with mental health in these COVID seasons was astronomical. And I was really taken aback and touched by how many people started sharing their stories, because I think that the nature of the COVID season kind of shined a light on a lot of people's mental struggles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I mean, people started posting more like on social media, even just talking about it more. And that's when you kind of think like, okay, I thought they had like all their stuff together. Like, yeah. I thought they were totally like great, yeah. Nothing wrong. And yeah. Then you're like, okay, so if they're one of the top athletes in the country and they're going through this, like there has to be like more people going through it also.
Right. Totally. And that's the amazing thing, is seeing that community kind of come together and people sharing their stories, because I think what I've talked about a little bit, one of the things I've found as I've been struggling with my own mental health, is that the worst thing is feeling like you're alone. But at the end of the day, you're not alone. And there is probably someone who has a very similar story to you. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Definitely. You've come across that at all.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think especially like not only the whole mental health aspect of it, but even like with the whole body dysmorphia coming out, like mm-hmm. I know you talked about on your podcast earlier, and then other athletes have come out talking about it, like just their struggle with eating and body image and all that kind of stuff. You just kind of realize that anyone is susceptible to this, and yeah. It's not just like something's wrong with only you. Like, it's a definitely a worldwide like epidemic.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I want to get started just with having you kind of explain your journey in the sport of beach volleyball and how mental health has kind of affected you as you've gotten older and grown up with the sport.
Yeah, so both my parents, actually, they met at San Jose State University and played indoor volleyball there. And after that, they kind of just played beach for fun down there, down the famous Manhattan Six-Man.
And classic.
Then I kind of grew up on the beach with them, watching them play just for fun, like on the sand always. And then I did the whole indoor route, which seems to be going away now.
Do kids even play indoor anymore if they play beach? I swear, like, you had to start playing indoor. Now you don't have to.
Yeah, there were literally no beach clubs, really, when we were growing up.
Yeah. And
so I played club from when I was 11 to 16, and then I just switched to beach, started playing beach when I was like 12 or 13, something like that. And then, I don't know, you just kind of play in those fun little tournaments where you're like, you buy that matching bikini with your friend.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. It was so much fun. And so then I actually started competitively competing in AAU and CBVA when I was 14-ish.
Yeah.
And then that's when, like, coming into high school and all that kind of stuff, realized that I wasn't going to be the tallest person playing indoor, especially as an outside. So I decided that, you know what? I like being on the beach anyways more than being in a gym. So made that transition to beach and haven't looked back since.
Well, I'm so glad you made that transition. Have I ever told you that first tournament we played in together when we got second, that was the second beach volleyball medal I ever got.
Really?
Second ever. That was, at that point, you had been playing a little bit longer than I had on the beach. And for anyone listening, Maddie McLeod and I go way back. Like I said, I've been friends with her since freshman year of high school. We've been playing in tournaments together since that time. Like I just said, in my second tournament I ever medaled in, it was with her, and there's been lots of medals since then. But I just thought about that. I don't think I've ever told you that.
No, I don't think you have. I remember that being like a big deal, because even like, I mean, like I had like won some medals, but like getting second, like, I mean, it's normally like a third or like a fourth, and you're like, woo!
Yeah.
But second, you're like, dang.
A second place. You like get into the finals, and it's like, win or you lose, you're getting a medal.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Sorry, I derailed you, but I just thought about that.
Okay. But yeah, that's basically my story. I started reaching out to schools. I thought I was going to do indoor and beach still at this point, like sophomore year of high school.
Psycho.
And so I know, gosh. But yeah, after that, I was contacted through my indoor club, actually, by Megan Owusu now.
Yes.
And she was like, hey, does Maddie play beach? And I was like, I can and I will.
Maddie does play beach.
And so, yeah, never looked back. And Cal was the greatest 4 years of my life.
Oh, gosh, I have to tell you, Lynn, because I think I committed like a month before you. And I remember you told me you were looking at Cal, and I was like, okay, cross my fingers. I'm like, come on Maddie, because was it between Cal and Stanford for you at the end?
It was Cal, and then I was also looking at LSU for a little bit.
That's right. Like, you, there was two at the end where Anna, you were swinging towards the other one, and I was like, come on man. And then that day when you text me and you're like, I'm going to Cal, I was like, yes, one of my best friends from high school is coming with me. I'm like, this is a dream come true. So I'm so glad that you decided to start contacting them and that you came with me, and even more glad that we got 4 years of collegiate beach volleyball together.
I know. I think I texted you that day that I committed, and I was like, hey, how would you like your roommate?
Yeah. And then Cal. I was like, well, I already have one, but you're coming to Cal. It's amazing. Oh my gosh. Oh yeah. So for the listeners, that is Maddie's general story. I would say it's about what most South Bay beach volleyball players went through. You start with indoor, you play for the big indoor club, you play for Mizuno. That was, I remember, that's a very successful club. I never played for an indoor club that good because I always knew my heart was kind of in beach. But, and then you came to the collegiate sphere. And now I kind of want to talk more about your experience in collegiate beach volleyball. I obviously know quite a bit because I know you kind of a little bit. We're kind of friends.
Just a little bit.
But I would love to hear and kind of let the listeners in on how collegiate beach volleyball and collegiate sports in general shaped up to what you thought it would be.
Yeah, so I recently, at the end of this last season, I put out an Instagram post just kind of bookending and tying up everything that I had done in collegiate beach volleyball and putting all my thoughts onto paper. I since then don't really have Instagram anymore. I've realized it's kind of like a big trigger for my mental health.
You got rid of Instagram again.
Sorry?
You got rid of Instagram again?
Yeah, so I don't have it on my phone. My mom has it on her phone, so she'll be like, did you see this picture? And I'm like, no.
No, mom, I don't have Instagram.
Yeah, so if any of you out there see me liking a picture, it's not me, it's my mom, so she must really like your picture.
That's a huge honor.
Yep.
Huge honor.
But yeah, in my post, I just kind of talked about how I don't think anything could ever prepare you for collegiate beach volleyball, yeah, or just collegiate sports in general, and yeah, especially at such a rigorous school like Cal. Like, yeah, I know Division One sports anywhere is going to be hard, but even like with that whole stigma of Cal being the number one public university in the world, mm-hmm, and having to live up to those academic expectations and then also athletic, that was something I was definitely not prepared for.
Yeah.
I felt like for Maricosta as a high school in general, it was pretty rigorous, mm-hmm, academically wise.
I agree. I felt pretty prepared academically.
Yeah. And I pushed myself in there too. And then I think just coming in, in high school, I could pretty much get away with not studying sometimes and still getting A's, like just kind of like knowing, yeah, things. But then taking college courses is just a different ball game.
You can't do that in college. You don't get to just study and just, you can't really just do the thing where it's like 5 minutes before a test and you're like, flip through the review notes. Okay, I'm good. You got to prepare like a week in advance, which is crap.
Oh, I know. God, it's awful.
It's awful.
Yeah, you learn quickly because, or else it's basically like sink or swim.
Yeah.
So you learn quick, but I think also just the amount of time you put in every single day, it's basically like a job that you're, yeah, playing your sport and you love it. Like, yeah, it's the best thing ever, being able to do what you love every single day and be with the people who are amazing and striving towards the same thing, like with you. But then that also kind of takes a toll on you mentally because then it's such a huge part of your everyday life,
right,
that if you don't succeed or when you finally finish that chapter in your life, you're kind of stuck in this limbo of figuring out now who's like, what's your new identity?
Right.
Kind of thing.
And that gets really scary for athletes. And a lot of athletes struggle with that. I always felt like, I mean, it's so easy to make it the center of your life. And I did that for a long time. Like, I would say my first 2 years of college, I made volleyball the center of everything because I was so passionate about it. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. There's nothing else. It's volleyball or nothing. And then I grew up a little and I was like, that's not necessarily true. There are other things that are more inspiring to me, and that's okay. But I was bad those first 2 years about finding other outlets besides volleyball. I would just be like, volleyball, and then do schoolwork. And then my outlet for schoolwork was volleyball and like hanging out with friends a little. But I always felt like you did a pretty good job. And I think that you realized as you got older that you had to do it for your own mental health of finding other outlets as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think what kind of started that whole thing was most people don't know this, but I was the only one in our class, at least, that never roomed with anyone on the team.
Yeah.
Like from the dorms till the end, I never roomed with beach volleyball. And I think,
I've never thought about that. You literally, yeah, never did you?
No.
Wow. Yeah.
Trying to stay away, far away from you guys as possible.
Yeah. That's really fair. We're the worst.
But I think that kind of helped me separate a little because just even going in thinking like, if someone beat me out in a spot, or like I had just beaten someone, or just like not a great practice happened, yeah. and then coming home and then still seeing that person, I felt like that was just going to be a disaster.
Yeah, that's fair.
And then that way I felt like I was able to keep a stronger friendship with all of you guys still, yeah. because I'm like, I have you guys over here,
yeah.
and then I have my roommates who know absolutely nothing about beach volleyball over here, so I don't need to talk about it all the time. So
and
it's great.
That mental break is huge. And mm-hmm. that's something that for me personally, I never thought about until like maybe this last year when I like, it honestly took quarantine for me to step away from beach volleyball, to be forced to step away, to realize like, whoa, I got to loosen the reins on how tightly I'm trying to run this beach volleyball ship and accomplish all my goals. Cause then that made me step back and help build other friendships and bonds. And I realized how important those were. And then this season, for the first time, I felt like I finally was able to do that thing where there were other outlets. And it's so nice.
Oh, it is.
It's so much better. It's so much better.
I also feel like it kind of retrains your brain too, that, you know, you don't have to, like, even when you're with your teammates, you don't have to talk about beach volleyball. Like, of course we do. Like, it's like the gossip.
Oh
like,
my gosh. Yeah. You have to
talk about it.
Yeah, of course.
but it's also like being around other people who don't know much about the sport, or you just have a different kind of connection with in life.
Yeah.
They kind of teach you like, okay, like I can still talk to Alexia about
yeah.
her family or her hobbies and it not be forced and weird.
Right.
Like it'll be normal.
Right. Exactly. I love that. And I think that's something that like, I wish I would have known and thought more about that coming in as a freshman. So I hope people listening, and if you're not in college yet, you help find those outlets. Like, you did such a great job of that. And I honestly tried to model myself after you in that regard and aspects. Also, I'm just thinking, my mind is thinking of other things that I've done to find like outlets. And I, with you personally, I remember freshman year, was it freshman or sophomore year, where we would used to get lunch when we would just have like, cause we did not play together at all until this past senior year. And which was so interesting for us because we had played quite a bit in high school, especially our senior year. We were like the inseparable duo for our high school team.
Oh, yeah.
So, and we were just kind of like on very different paths in collegiate beach volleyball until we finally linked up this year. But yeah. It was so nice. It was always nice having those. We would have weekly lunch dates where we would just decide, okay, we're on the same team. We're both doing very different things. I think that freshman year, you were playing on the fives with Grace, right? And that's when you guys were like undefeated, just amazing. And then I was playing on the ones with Mima, and I was crapping my pants every day because I was a freshman playing against future Olympians, and it was terrifying. And the yeah. only thing sometimes getting me through that terrifying, paralyzing fear was knowing that I could go every week and talk to my best friend, Maddie, about life in volleyball and having you as an outlet. And so that was that's one of the things I'll never forget, is having that outlet with you. And that's just another thing that came to mind when you started talking about that.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I mean, I think we started that freshman year, continued it sophomore year, and then junior year, COVID happened. Yeah. And this last year, we actually played together, so it didn't even matter.
So
but yeah, I mean, that's great. Just even being able to just be on two different sides of like the very same team.
Yeah.
And like just going through two different experiences and kind of almost bouncing ideas off each other, like yeah. almost like a therapy session.
Kind of. Friend therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. You just kind of vent it out, just get it out there.
It's always good. It's always good. So now I'm thinking about how freshman year and how young we were, and gosh, just I wish we could go back and be like, hey man, and like shake ourselves. When you kind of look back and think about your whole journey through collegiate beach volleyball, how has your like mental health and your journey with that progressed through the 4 years?
So to start talking about that, I kind of have to go back a little bit. So
yeah.
In middle school, I kind of was in like this group of friends who weren't totally the nicest to me. Mm-hmm. Like I was bullied a little bit. And then I think that just like really weighed on me mentally. Like I even remember we'd be like hanging out at lunch and then they would like run away to another side of the field and I'd just be like, okay. And then I'd go after them and they run somewhere else. And I was like, okay.
What the heck, guys? Oh my gosh. Don't ever tell me their names.
What?
Don't ever tell me their names, Maddie.
Never.
Don't tell me.
And so after that started happening, I started talking to my mom, which I am so grateful that I have such supportive parents that I do, because I feel like I could talk to them about anything.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, you know, like, this really sucks. Not gonna lie. I'm really sad all the time, like all this stuff. And so then that's when I started going to therapy in eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And I did that for a while, probably like a year to a year and a half. And then I went through that whole teenage phase where I was like, I don't need help.
Yeah.
And so then I stopped doing that for a while. And it was like fine for a while. Volleyball was still fun for me. And then once I got to college, volleyball turned into my job,
yep,
like I said before. Mm-hmm. And so then freshman year, as much as I, like, we all hate to admit it, like, winning kind of becomes a lot of what defines you as being successful.
Totally. And when you get a taste of it, you, mm-hmm, you crave it. You crave it.
Yeah, so I think I had a very, very unique experience coming in freshman year. Like, I somehow got paired with Grace on the fives, and I think we lost like three total games that year.
Did you even lose three? I don't even know if you lost three. Okay, wow. You guys lost three, you suck. Like that.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like, we were like 20-3 or something like that.
You were the number one ranked five pair that year for like the whole year. That was amazing. Like,
that was something I could have never, like, ever expected.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone ever could. And so then after that, you know, she was still on the team my sophomore year. And I was like, okay, cool. Let's go, like, repeat.
Yeah, dream and team's then, coming back.
Yeah. And then, obviously, like, it's so hard to reproduce results, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, with, like, just you have that whole last season and then there's expectations. And then just people are getting better. Like, teams are getting better. And so then I think not being able to basically do the same thing and then being paired differently, that really took a toll on me.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, okay, that's all I did last year was win. So why the heck can't I do it now?
Totally.
And that I really took like a really bad downward spiral. And I think there was one day that was just so bad, and I had like gone to practice a few times, like crying, and Megan's like, and Megan, our coach, was saying like, hey, like, what's wrong? Like, we got to leave what's outside of volleyball outside of volleyball. But then I'm like, but it's about volleyball.
It is volleyball.
I can't tell you that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I ended up taking, I had asked the coaches and then a bunch of the other staff, like, if I could just take a mental health day. I didn't know what the heck that was, but I just need a day. I don't know if I'm allowed to do it, but I just need a day away.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this is so detrimental and I'm really scared of my inner self thoughts right now.
Yeah.
That I just need a day. And they were like, absolutely, do not worry about it. Like, and so then they're like, you don't even have to tell the team if you wanted to. But at that point I was just like, they're such a big part of my life and literally like my sisters and my family that can't just leave them hanging. And so I think I texted all of you and I was like, hey, like, I'm really sorry. I'm not going to be there today. And like, it's nothing against you guys, like, whatever. And then I think at that, so for all of you who don't know, at Cal Beach Volleyball, Megan, who is now the new head coach again, has her infamous walks. So if you're having if you're having a, like, a bad day or, like, she just wants to talk to you, like, you go on a walk and it's long.
Yeah.
So
no one was able to read you like Megan. Like, when I did not want to say a word to anybody how I was struggling, she'd come up to me and be like, just stare at me and be like, we need to go on a walk. And I'm like, no, but I do.
Yeah, so she's like, okay, I know you're not coming to practice tomorrow, but while the team is doing weights, let's go for a walk. And so we went on a walk and I basically just like got all my feelings out to her, cried a lot, did a whole big hike. I mean, that was really helpful to me. I am someone who's super independent and just really, I really don't like to ask for help still.
You and me both.
still working on it.
Yep.
And so I just think that I can figure everything out on my own, and that's not possible sometimes. So
it's really hard.
So yeah, being able to just talk to someone who wasn't really like a unbiased third party, but kind of like acted as one, like in that scenario, like didn't bring volleyball up once. Like she was just letting me just like, she was just acting as my sounding board, like being there while I just blurted everything out.
Yeah.
That was super nice. And then that's when I started going on medication for it, because I figured that, you know, like as much of a, I felt like there was, and there still kind of is, we're trying to break that down, that stigma of mental health.
Totally.
And so just, I almost felt like I was like giving up or like losing the battle if I was like, okay, like fine, I'll go on medication for it. Like I can't do it on my own. And that was really hard for me.
Yeah.
And, but then after I started taking it, it like helped me. It was like night and day. And I was like, why the heck haven't I been doing this? Like, why have I been spending all this time being so unhappy? Whereas like this little tiny pill can like help me. And I'm not like saying like the medication is for everyone. It just happened to like be the cure for me for, at that point in time.
It worked for you.
Yeah. And so that was great for a while. And then after that, like this COVID year was really hard because we had a really special team. And I feel like everyone could say the same thing. Like we all felt like we were going to go to NCAAs.
Yeah.
And like that was just super hard. And like losing all those great seniors and all that kind of stuff was tough.
Yeah.
And then that's when like we all got that taste of our identity is being like really pushed to the limits right now. Like,
dude,
you may not have it anymore.
We got flipped on our heads.
Mm-hmm.
You had to redefine who you were a little bit that time.
Yeah. And so that was when, and then also throughout this whole time, I had like a dumb elbow injury. Still don't know what it is.
Dumb? That wasn't dumb. You had surgery on it.
I had surgery. My body's making bone spurs where it doesn't need to. And so
you're extra.
Had surgery for that. And then I think it all kind of culminated junior year and senior year where that just like wasn't getting better. And I still wasn't producing the results that I wanted to.
Yeah.
And then that's when sadly started losing my love for the sport. And that's what got me really scared. And my mental health took like another big plummet. And I was just like, I don't like, what's the point of me wanting to do this if, or like sticking it out if I'm not happy?
Yeah.
I'm crying in almost every practice for no reason.
Yeah.
Like I genuinely couldn't tell anyone. Like everyone's like, well, what's wrong? What's wrong? And I'm like, I don't know. I
and
genuinely don't
sometimes
know.
You just don't know. And that's one of the scariest parts, is that you're like, why am I sad? I just don't know. I just am.
Yeah. Or like, and then I think I also talked about how even like when I was winning, I'm like, oh, well, I didn't deserve that. Like they didn't play their best volleyball. And like trying, and like that whole thought process was so, so toxic.
Yeah.
And I'm still struggling with that now, but I mean, it's going to be a long road, but
that's how mental health is.
Yeah. But yeah, so that kind of sucked. And like going into senior year, like I stuck it out and I did everything I could. I did it for basically the team because we had a whole sit down and we talked about our why statements and like why we play beach volleyball, why we're doing that. Because if you don't have a why, then like if it gets taken away, like
then why?
Then
you don't have a why, then why?
I know. So everyone's going around and then I'm realizing as everyone's going around, I'm like, God, I'm going to sound so lame because I'm going to be like, it's what? Literally only because you guys, because I don't love it anymore, which sucked. And so then I started crying in the middle of that.
Of course.
And then I don't know though. I guess like the people around you are such a big support system and like there's such a big force of drive like than I even thought I had, and like I was willing to go through all of the crap that was going on in my head and everything that I thought was going on that probably wasn't, I just perceived it as that. I was willing to go through all of that and like stick it out like for these amazing girls around me, which really helped me out.
And you sit here and you say that what you said was lame. What you said that day was probably one of my favorite things I heard that anyone in the group said. It touched me, and I saw like five people start tearing up when you started talking, because we could feel, I mean, like, I knew personally that, because you had been telling me before a little bit how you were struggling with your love for the game and that it wasn't where you wanted it to be. And I totally related to that because I've gone through those moments too before. But I knew that you were playing for the team. But I don't think a lot of people knew that specifically. But that day you said that, I mean, that brought everyone closer together, because you've got people, there's a difference. They say there's no I in team, but there's a difference when there's those people who are playing because they crave the win. And then there's people who are playing literally for the team. And those people that are playing for the teams are the reasons that teams become successful. And that's how you create a unit. So you saying it was lame is a load of crap. It was not lame, and it touched everybody's heart. I just had to tell you that.
Well, that's good. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Obviously, your story is amazing, and it's, to me, what's most prominent is that it's relatable. You're sitting here telling me, I've heard this stuff before from you. I've lived it with you before. But as you're sitting here, like, talking about what you went through this season, I'm like, damn, man, I was thinking the same things. And I remember when you and I finally got to link up for this year, for senior year, we were playing together. It didn't go as well as we had wanted it to, because we had those high school expectations where we were just like, we're untouchable, we're fire. And we were like, high school, run it back. And I think immediately, honestly, that created stress for us that we found impossible love to. Like you said, it's impossible to recreate results because we're shifting every day as humans. So we had that expectation, and then it wasn't going great. We were losing matches we shouldn't have lost. We were confused, and it got to the point where you and I were looking at each other and we were like, what's wrong with us? What, like, why can't we figure this out? And it's taken me up until literally this moment right now to realize that nothing was wrong with us. We were both struggling so much mentally and with relation to volleyball that it was hard for us to create like cohesion on the court, because you're sitting there feeling like, when you're saying, what I related to most was when you were saying, even when you won, you didn't feel like you deserved it. That's how I felt every single time this year. I was like, even if I won, I was like, I probably don't deserve it. I've lost way more than I've won. I don't deserve that. So no wonder it was so hard for us, because we were both struggling and trying to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that anyone in sports, I feel like, is some version of a perfectionist. Like, you just want to be the best that you can be. And so then when you make one single mistake, like, especially with us, it just compounds on each other. Yeah. And like, you're like, oh, like, I'm sorry, I'll do this. And then it's like, no, I'm sorry, I'll do this. And it's just never, never productive. But no. Yeah.
The apology game never works. It really does. It never does. But now that everyone knows about your story and how you've worked so hard to like get through all this stuff, I think one of the most important things, and what I'm trying to do by sharing other people's stories and shedding light on this stuff, is trying to find things that have helped you specifically. Because like I said, nobody's alone in these struggles. I'm sure there's somebody out there who's going to listen to this and is going to be like, holy crap, I went through that same thing as her. So I just want to hear what has worked for you and what has made you feel better. And there's no healing mental health. It's a journey. It's a lifelong journey of more managing it and figuring out what works for you. So what has helped you?
So I think a big thing I've been talking about is just having that separation and knowing that your whole life is not volleyball. Like, it could be, it could be that you go and you do pro, you do all that, and like, you keep doing volleyball, whatever, but you still need to have a life outside of it. And I think I already knew going into college, I'm like, okay, like, I'm doing it for 4 years, but I'm not going to, like, it's not going to be my career. Like, I want to do something else.
Yeah.
And that definitely, I mean, I would say that would help, but then I still cared too much anyway. So definitely having that separation, like being able to, whether you want to talk to people or not, just knowing that you have people who are unbiased, are outside of that volleyball world that you can talk to if you need to.
Yeah.
Or just knowing that, like, okay, this person, like, I'm not tied to them only because of volleyball. Because, like, there are a few people who I was friends with, like, in juniors.
Yeah.
Because you're like, okay, like, I play in tournaments with them. I see them at tournaments.
Yeah.
Volleyball.
Yeah.
And then see them outside and you're like, I don't know how to talk to you.
Yeah, it's like they're strangers.
Yeah. So I think being able to just, like, broaden your horizons and your friend groups, like, that was great for me, mm-hmm. Personally. And also just finding things that take your mind, like, almost, like, turn your mind off. Like, for me, yeah. That's reading.
Yeah.
I love, I'm a huge Stephen King
yes,
fan.
Yes, you are.
So, I love a challenge. And so all of his, like, 600,000 page books, I'm like, that, yep, that's it. So yep. I'll just sit there. I'm like, I need to not think about anything. And I just need yeah. to not be me. And so then I just kind of read yep. and, like, become the characters, just, like, think about something else. Another thing that has helped me is just kind of if those, like, thoughts kind of, I feel like a lot of the time those bad thoughts come when you're just sitting there mm-hmm. and you have nothing to do and yep. you're just thinking and overthinking. And
yep.
obviously that comes in the nighttime because you're just trying to sleep. But during the day, yeah. what can help for me is I just like to keep busy. And yeah. Honestly, one thing I've started doing is I actually watched it on a YouTube channel. It's this photographer named Peter McKinn. He got it from someone else uh-huh. that I can't remember at the time. But there's this thing that he does, and it's like a 100-day challenge of having like 8 critical tasks that you do every single day
yeah.
and like physically writing them down.
Yeah.
And then as you complete them, like crossing them off. And yeah. so it's kind of like, it's almost like a game, like, with yourself. Like, I'm still able to be competitive, which I love.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of, ooh, like, okay, I have to get all these 8 things done, and I need to find time in the day to do it. And
yeah.
so then now, like, you create a routine for yourself, and you're keeping busy. And then at the same time, like, when you think, like, when you finish something, you get to physically cross it off. And
yeah.
you're like, that's a win. Like,
yeah.
that's success.
Yeah.
And so then you push yourself to, like, get rid of those 8 critical tasks every day, and then that's, like, considered a successful day for you.
Yeah.
And so then, I don't know, that's been really fun and cool for me. Like, even if it's just, like dumb little things, like, oh, like, I want to go for a walk. Like, I need to be outside.
Yeah.
Or I want to, like, fold my laundry. Like, some, like, things, like, I don't normally want to do, where
yeah.
I'm like, oh, it's on my list. Like,
right.
I want
to get
it done.
It's creating, I found that creating that routine, because one of the biggest things I struggle with is anxiety. And the thing that usually helps me, number one, is creating that routine, even if it's stupid things like eat breakfast and read. Having a routine for the day helps, like, keep me on track and keep me going, which is what it sounds like what you do too.
Yeah, definitely just keeping your mind occupied. But then also, like, I'm not saying to, like, completely just disregard those thoughts, because, like, they're gonna happen.
Right.
And, like, you kind of, you really have to address them. And that's the hardest thing that I realize, is I can't just be one where I'm like, okay, well, I'm just not going to think about that right now, and I'm going to do something else and I'll think about it later.
Yeah.
But then that just kind of, it somehow finds a way to compound itself, and it gets worse.
Right.
And that's how I got into the hole that I did, is, like, I was just putting so much pressure on myself, and I just never addressed it. Like, never talked to anyone about it, never did any of that. And, like, I know how hard it is to talk to people about
yeah.
it, and, like, thinking that you can't do it on your own.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we are social creatures, like,
right.
at heart. Like,
right.
we need interaction. And I think that was made really apparent to me with one of our old teammates, Bridget Gustafson, actually. And
yeah.
she was the one who told me, she's like, it's scientifically proven that you need 6 hugs a day to live, like, to stay alive,
yeah.
which obviously isn't totally true, but whatever. 6 hugs a day, for, to, like, stay alive. And then it's like 8 for sustainability. So like you're staying at the same point. Yeah. And then you need 10 for growth.
Yeah.
And I don't know why, but that has stuck with me every single day. And then even Cassidy, who's in our grade, she and I every day would be like, well, we'll get 2 hugs, 1 before practice, 1 for after. And we just got to find 4 throughout the day somewhere else.
Yeah. I love that.
That just kind of gives you that interaction with others that like, you're not alone. Right. And like, as much as you think you are, like you just, I have one person who now happens to be my boyfriend, but it was someone else on the team, is when I was having like a bad day, like I just had a code word and it was black licorice, because I hate black licorice. But so that was just associated with a bad day. And so I would just text them and be like, hey, black licorice. And they'd be like, okay. Let me know if you need anything, but I know, and like, thank you. I'll just be looking for, like, after you.
Yeah.
Like just making sure you're okay. Like knowing what's going on. No one else needs to know.
Yep.
You don't even need to like admit that you're having a bad day. It's just like, it's a word.
Yeah. It's just it's just the comfort of kind of knowing that someone knows what's going on, but they're not going to smother you and be like, let's fix it. Let's do this. It's like, because sometimes you don't need someone to fix it. You just need someone to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beautiful thing about all of this, and what I love about you and how you've grown and watching you grow with your mental health, is that you did not want to talk to anyone. And now you're such an advocate of telling people talking to someone is how you heal and how you manage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's amazing.
Great. That's what I'm trying to do. I mean, even now, I mean, I'm still struggling with it too. Like my mom will be like, oh, are you having a bad day? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
I'm fine. No, I'm fine. Why? Is it the tears streaming down my cheeks that made you ask that? I'm fine. It's like Ross in that Friends episode when he's like, I'm fine.
Exactly. You obviously don't have to talk to anyone if you don't want to. Like, I fully get that. Yeah. And I still have those days. I know Alexia still has those days.
Yep.
And it's just kind of like, when you're ready and whatever you feel most comfortable with, like, you do that. And whatever it is, like, that's going to help you. Like, I don't know if that's medication for you or therapy. That's also been really great for me. And then just talking to people, different hobbies.
Yeah. It's all helpful.
Oh yeah. Well, and I figured out, like, I felt like for the longest time, like my purpose in life was to like help people. And so I just got a job where I'm a medical assistant. So I get to help. I thankfully get to help people every single day. Yeah. And so that's been super great. And I think just finding that thing that brings you like joy, no matter what you're doing and when you're doing it and for how long, like I, like 12 hours a day, like why would I want to work for 12 hours a day? But I still look forward to it every night. I'm like, oh my God, I get to go help people tomorrow. Like that's the coolest thing to me.
And Maddie Micheletti, that is why you're amazing and why I think you're such an incredible human with the best heart. And I love what you've said, and I hope that everyone listening has been able to absorb everything you've said like a sponge, because you have dropped knowledge, to put it plainly, about how to be a collegiate athlete and how to get through it and handle it even when you feel like you can't. And one of those things that I've most gathered from this conversation with you, I always learn something new when I talk to you because you're just so damn insightful. It's find your recipe that works for you for managing and find your people. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's beautiful. And Maddie Micheletti, you are my people and I love you so much. And I am so thankful that you took this time to share all of this with me. And I hope that everyone enjoys it as much as I did. And thank you.
Of course. And I love you too. You're obviously one of my people too.
Oh, stop.
And thank you so much for, thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
I would love to have you on again. So anytime you want to share more, if you got any new ideas, you know where I live. You have my number.
Of course.
Love you, dear.
All right. Love you too.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to me and Maddie's awesome conversation. It was so great having one of my closest friends on the podcast to discuss collegiate sports, mental health, and how to deal with everything and just kind of make life a little bit easier. So thank you again for watching, and stay tuned for the next episode of Life's a Beach with Alexia Inman.